Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. We are the number one global fintech podcast. 177 countries, 6.6 million listeners annually. We're really happy to have you as we come to you live from New York. Now, for the show today, I do have an interview we did with NetGuardians on their AI fraud development, fraud prevention technology, which we're going to air in a moment. We pre-recorded that due to time zones, but before we get to that, I'm just going to give you guys some of the news that's happening in the fintech space. So you might have heard, but SBI Holdings, who runs a fintech investment platform out in Asia, is a partner of Ripple. And Ripple has worked with them to get a license for a blockchain-based money app to compete with Suica and Felicia in the Japanese market. So this is one of the first DLT-based payment apps in Japan and indeed in Asia. It's called MoneyTap. You can make instant domestic payments via a bank account, a phone number, a QR code. So it's really cool to see Ripple getting into sort of a tactical wallet. Position in Japan there. It will be interesting to see how that pans out. Goldman Sachs has invested in a blockchain-based cross-border payment startup called Veeam. Veeam has raised $25 million in a strategic funding round led by Goldman Sachs and joined by Google Ventures. Others, Silicon Valley Bank, Extel Capital, Trendford Capital, Kleiner Perkins, and others were involved in this. Veeam is particularly focused on the multi-trillion dollar small to medium business cross-border payments market. So this is not a consumer play. Hong Kong's faster payment platform has gone live as of a few days ago. For those of you watching, the faster payments initiatives happening in the world, it's speeding up. There's a lot of activity in this. The US is planning on doing faster payments in 2019. So far in Hong Kong, though, 21 banks, including Bank of China, DBS, HSBC, OCBC, and others. Also, Alipay and Octopus are all signed up for the service. So HKMA has introduced a sort of common QR standard for this. So it's interesting to see what's happened in China with Ant Financial, Alipay, and Tencent WeChat is really having an influence effect there. In other news, we see the first casualty of the Chinese-US trade war right now with Meta, who's an augmented reality startup based out in Silicon Valley, that has announced that they're cutting or putting 75% of their staff on hiatus as a result of the failure in a massive private equity venture capital deal that had been lined up with a Chinese private equity firm. The Chinese government sent an official request to that investor and shut down the investment in Meta. So we're starting to see Silicon Valley affected somewhat by some of these plays that are, or some of the implications of the trade war. Having said that, Oculus Quest and Facebook has released this new mainstream VR device, Oculus Quest, and it's getting a lot of really good press. If you don't know what it's about, Quest has sensors in the VR headset that allow you to track your environment and play immersive VR games and movies and so forth within the physical environment that you're in. So it responds to that physical environment. So some rather cool technology being developed there by Oculus. Definitely worth keeping an eye on what's happening. We have also, of course, Magic Leap has launched their developer kit. So there's a lot of really interesting action happening there. Just before we go to do our interview with NetGuardians, you will be aware that we have coming up a couple of conferences. We have BAI Retail, we have Cybos in Sydney, Money 2020, all coming up over the next few weeks. The big one I'd like to draw your attention to, of course, is October 22nd to 25th at the International Convention Centre in Sydney, is Cybos Sydney. I'll be there doing the opening keynote for InnerTribe. Also with me will be Joe Lubin, the co-founder of Ethereum. He'll be on stage closing out the InnerTribe session. While I'm in Sydney there, there'll be plenty of Bank 4.0 signings. We'll do a special evening hosted by Salesforce at their Financial Services Base Camp. You can check that out at salesforce.com. And we'll be doing a dinner event there with Accenture on the 25th. If you have something you want to share with our audience, the largest fintech audience in the media space today, hit us up on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. Okay, so let's get to the interview that I did earlier in the week with our friends at NetGuardian. So on this week's show, we're going to talk to a group that is based out of both Asia and Europe, NetGuardians, about the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning in the area of fraud management. As you know, we're obviously talking a lot about artificial intelligence of late, but there's huge progress has been made in quite a short amount of time in this area. So I'd like to drill down into some of the mechanics of the type of artificial intelligence that is being deployed for fraud management. Fraud is one of the first areas that we've really managed to apply machine learning and AI algorithm-based testing to. And there's been incredible progress made in a relatively short amount of time. But of course, the real question is, how do you go about as an organization implementing this type of technology to reduce fraud, to protect customers? And given that there are success stories out there about this, how quickly can you deploy this? What sort of team do you need to do this? That sort of stuff I'd like to delve into today. We're joined from two of the executive team at NetGuardians. So Rafael Mayo, he is a board member. He's a chief operating officer and co-founder of NetGuardians. He's a managing director for Asia Pacific. So he's primarily responsible for the business development in Asia. And Rafael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Brett.
Now you've of course got tons of technology experience, but let's introduce Jerome before we get into background of you guys a little bit more. Jerome is the Chief Technology Officer for NetGuardians, and along with his experience in developing banking software and so forth, and R&D, he specializes in systems architecture. He looks at the life cycle, but Jerome obviously is leading a lot of the effort on the AI development or machine learning capabilities internally at the team. So Jerome, how do I spell your family name, Jerome? Curley?
Yes, absolutely. Hello, Brett. Hello, everyone. It's Jerome Curley.
Right. And where are you guys both based? I know, Rafael, you're in Singapore. Is that right?
Exactly. I'm based in Singapore right now.
And Jerome, you're in Switzerland?
In Switzerland, yes, Switzerland, absolutely. We're in Yverdon, which is a tiny city near to Lausanne in Switzerland.
Okay, near Lausanne, very good. Okay, so first of all, tell me a little bit about NetGuardians so we can get started with, because you guys are obviously made a big bet on AI and machine learning, but tell me a bit more about NetGuardians as a company.
Okay, so let me introduce you, NetGuardians. So NetGuardians is a Swiss company. We started the company based in Yverdon, and we are specialized in fraud prevention. In the early years of the company, we were really specialized and focusing on research about security, real time, when it was kind of the inception of log management. And in 2011, when we really started the company, we switched to the financial domain, and we started to apply our techniques in that specific field in order to prevent fraud in real time around different areas such as the internal frauds, the digital fraud, and all the space related to fraud in general. And it's true with the advent of this all new technology with big data nowadays, and the AI, especially we've seen really tremendous results nowadays.
So you guys have also had quite a successful run. You raised over, if I'm reading this correct, $14 million, $15 million to date. You're in the top 50 fintech companies in Europe in 2016 by FT. You know, so the company is the fintech startup, right?
Yes, correct. We are a startup company, even a scale-up, as we have grown significantly in the last 3 years. We doubled the size of the company every year, reaching now a little bit less than 100 people. And we have offices in different parts of the world, as the headquarters is in Switzerland, but we also have an office here in Singapore for the Asia-Pacific region, and an office in Nairobi, in Kenya. And with these three offices today, we are helping more than 50 banks around like 15 or 16 countries amongst this Europe, APAC, and Africa continent.
Nairobi is an interesting choice for an office. Why did you guys choose, like Singapore is fairly obvious as a fintech center, but why did you guys choose Nairobi as your third office?
So it was really in the past due to a partner that we have, as we work with Temenos, and it happened that a lot of their clients are based in Africa, and via this partnership we got the first client, then a second, then a third, and when we had like six or seven clients, sure, in Nairobi, we decided to open an office in order to be closer to our client.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Okay, so you know, when we talk about artificial intelligence, it's sort of this broad catch-all phrase that's been used for you know, everything from artificial general intelligence, robots that or algorithms that can trick us into thinking they're humans, through to very simple you know, technologies like maybe facial recognition, you know, or one sort of subset of artificial intelligence. But really, you know, when we talk about AI, it's a little misleading at the moment, because we're mostly talking about algorithms and we're talking about machine learning capabilities, which you know, is when you think about AI in the science fiction term of these sort of self-aware algorithms and so forth. But we're really at a point now where we're helping machines to learn. We're teaching them for pattern recognition and these sorts of components. So can you sort of describe the type of machine learning capabilities that you guys have built in respect to things like fraud management, where you guys are deploying this technology? How does the machine learning specifically work in respect to your stack?
Good. Rafael, I'll take this one. You know, I have to look a little backwards in time to give you an elaborated answer. You know, the thing is that when I joined Guardians 4 or 5 years ago, banking fraud detection was mostly relying on rules engines and, you know, searching for really well-defined and predefined behavior patterns in the audit trails of the information system. And the problem is that while this has been sufficient for a dozen of years in the 2000s, right? Today it's not sufficient, because think of the digitalization of the banking business. Think of the multiplication of the various channels that customers use to pass a transaction or interact with the banking institution. Today, the complexity of the banking information system has become such that applying rules and checking for predefined behavior pattern is not sufficient. And imagine that you want to deploy a set of rules to, you know, check the validity or the legitimacy of a financial transaction. And imagine that you do this for a customer such as myself, for instance, right, that uses his account to pay his bills at the end of the month, or pay for his taxes, or pay for a car rental or whatever. In my case, if suddenly a transaction is input on my account that, you know, withdraws, I don't know, 50,000 Swiss francs and send them to a counterparty in Nigeria or Hong Kong, this should be blocked by the information system. So designing this rule is pretty straightforward, right? But now take another example. Imagine that a specific customer who is the responsible of acquisition for a big corporation is trading with the corporate account. And that guy is traveling all over the world to pay for providers everywhere in the world, big amounts everywhere in the world. In this case, it's on the contrary. A tiny transaction with drawing a few hundred Swiss francs to pay for a telephone bill in Switzerland that should be blocked by the system because that is the fraud. Likely the corporate employee. Yes, can you hear me? Likely the corporate employee is using the corporate account to pay his own taxes. And this is the finding. Every bank customer is different. And if you want to implement rules to detect fraud in each and every situation, considering the so many different customers of the banking of the institution, you end up implementing dozens of thousands of rules on the system, and that's infeasible. And this is where artificial intelligence kicks in. Machine learning can learn about past behavior of customers and also employees and analyze each and every financial transaction, comparing it to the past behavior of the customer. And if that transaction is deemed sufficiently risky or sufficiently unusual by the artificial intelligence, the machine can block the transaction in real time and qualify it for further review, for further investigation by the banking institution. So everything we're doing,
it's a lot about behavior.
Yeah.
It's a lot about learning how people behave. So in the instance of fraud management, you're really looking for outside of the behavioral norms. But when you, as in the cases you've given, that can, customer by customer, be actually quite complex, because sometimes it's very easy to figure out when behavior is different. But in instances where that behavior is broad enough, for someone like me, for example, who does 20 or 30 countries a year, I figure I must be a nightmare for machine learning algorithms to sort of track my type of payments and spending behavior.
Right. But think of the so many different aspects of a financial transaction. There are the countries in which you are traveling, indeed. But there are also the kind of transaction you do in these countries. Maybe you're paying for restaurants, paying for hostels, paying for car rentals. But very unlikely are you going to buy a car in Bangladesh, for instance, right? So there are still a whole dozens of probes we can use to compare your activity with the past to figure whether it's legitimate or potentially fraudulent.
So, sorry, go ahead.
And one element there that is also really important, in order to be able to change this paradigm where in the past we were really kind of modelizing what the fraudster were doing. So all this this couple of years ago where we tried to only work with rule, the goal was to try what are the schemes that exist, and we were really centric on the fraudster. Now the goal is to be more centric on the customer side, because what a financial institution knows is the customers. They know how much they earn, they know how much they spend, they know where they go when they spend money. And by adding additional information, not only information from the transaction itself, but adding additional set of data coming from devices, from other stream, for other elements that the bank has, it becomes much easier to profile someone. As you were mentioning, you travel in a lot of countries, but if you're used to do your mobile payment, I doubt that in every single country you will use a new phone or a new laptop or a new set of card. And all these elements,
right,
put all together, makes it something, let's say, much easier or possible to achieve in terms of behavior, because we are not only referring to a simple transaction.
So when we talk about machine learning, obviously there's a component of learning that comes into seeding the right data so that a machine can determine, the various conclusions or elements. So how do you get the data to feed into these algorithms so they can learn and, set their patterns for recognition?
It's an excellent question. You know, most of the time when we deploy the system in a banking institution, we let the bank know that, hey guys, we need 1 year historical data for each and every data set that we will require, to build the consolidated view on the data that we use to train and our algorithm, right? So we need 1 year history. Surprisingly, 1 year history is both the minimum period and the best period, because in 1 year you have all the periodical events as well, such as holidays, Christmas, and so on. And it turns out sometimes that the banking institution was not collecting some of the data we require, some of the audit trails we need. In this case, we start with at least a few weeks, and then we'll improve slowly, constituting this 1 year history and slowly increasing, broadening the view of the artificial intelligence.
Now, you guys, when you started back in 2007, was it when you were founded? I'm just trying to.
Yeah, we started in 2007, but we were from 2007 to 2011, we were part of a university. So we created the company, but we were part of a university, and we really went out, on the market in 2011.
2011. Now, at that time, were you guys using machine learning? Because that was very early in the process.
No, at that time, we were definitely not using machine learning in 2011. At that time, we were more focused on the security aspect of the real-timeness of the transaction and how to handle billions of information and be able to process it. So the early stage of our life were really more focused on the real-timeness of transaction, of feed. In 2004-05, it was the big start of log management, where a lot of companies started to analyze millions of data when the big data platform didn't exist at that time. And that was all the research we were doing at that time, really related to how to handle and process lot of information.
You know what? When I joined the Guardians 4 years ago, I had already 15 years of experience working on large data analytics projects in banking institutions. And if you look back in the past, 5 years ago, most fraud detection and fraud prevention solutions were coming from AML vendors, right? AML vendors figures that fraud prevention would be an interesting market to increase their sales turnover. So they entered the market and started branding the AML solution for fraud prevention as well. And the problem is that most, if not all, these solutions were rules engines working on the analytics system, one day after the fact in the best case scenario. And when I joined at Guardians, the most striking aspect of the platform that they already had at the moment was the real-time readiness of everything they were doing. At Guardians was already 5 years ago a data analytics company able to implement each and every of its analytics use cases in real time. And I figured that this was a striking ground to build what we had built in the past 4 or 5 years and making it possible to run very advanced algorithm on a big data platform in real time as we're doing now.
So this is, I think this is key, because the real time component keeps coming through this, is that you if you're going to tackle fraud in real time, then you've got to have a baseline of data, because otherwise you can't make some assumptions about an individual transaction or an individual payment without that context. So that data collection that you do beforehand to then manage in context, whether that's a fraudulent transaction or not, in real time, you know, is really based upon that. But when you guys started this process and you started thinking about use of artificial intelligence and machine learning, you know, how did NetGuardians, I won't say the word pivot necessarily, but how did you guys adjust your strategy to then say, listen, you know, we're already real time, but now we've got to be AI based? And you know, what happened within the company when you made that commitment?
So that came really in regards to the different customers that we had, and as well the results, because through the year doing real time, we were seeing that there were some false positive, and more fast you are, and more false positive they were, and we initiated a couple of research with different university in Europe in order to work on that domain to be how can we have better results, more striking results with, let's say, the right balance of system. Because at the time, when still today, a lot of the institution with whom we worked, private bank, were institutions that were absolutely closed to the idea of having a cloud or having data somewhere where you can create this giant mass of data and create your model out of elements outside the institution. So we had to find the right balance of technology system to be able to work on some institution that do not wanted to have external access, do not wanted to share their data, do not had private infrastructure like a big data center and having thousand and thousand of server. So all these constraints pushed us to work with some universities to find some alternative and exploring different ways in regard to the speed and the algorithm to really find out what could help us to achieve better results. So we mainly started all this this work through university research and with some client with whom we had the chance to use their real set of data to start comparing our kind of past result and new result with the new technology that we were developing.
Now, that's the second time you guys have mentioned universities, but that's often the case with these leading technologies. Even if you look back at the development of the mainframe, the first bank mainframe that was developed in 1953 didn't come out of IBM or a company like that. It came out of MIT University. The was built for Bank of America called Irma. So universities are often the place where we ground these skills, where it goes from theory to the first applicable use of these technologies. So do you still work closely with universities today?
Yes, definitely. I think it's really key, you know. You know, fraud prevention in banking institution is still a competitive business with several solutions, several vendors out there. And while we do not want necessarily to share all our conclusions openly on the market, we have to find the right balance. And we cannot work in a closed way. We cannot work entirely on our own, because that will be, you know, refraining us from understanding and learning all the initiatives that are done in the academic world on the very topic we're working in. And we have to find the right balance between sharing what we can with universities so that we can benefit from the finding of researchers in the academic world, and telling too much, saying too much, and, you know, sharing our competitive advantage with some of our competitors. But long story short, it's very key for us to keep, you know, being open-minded in regards to where the market is going and what are the last progresses when it comes to deploying artificial intelligence techniques for banking fraud prevention. And we found out that the best way to keep our mind open is to work very closely with researchers from the academic world.
So can you, in respect to the specific angle of false positives that you mentioned earlier, how did application of artificial intelligence reduce those false positives?
It's an excellent question. I can give you one example. One of the first version of the algorithm we deployed was looking at the past behavior of the customer. So let me give you an example. Imagine that tomorrow I buy a new car. I buy a new Audi, so that's a 50K Swiss francs, 50K Swiss franc transaction, leaving my account for Audi Switzerland, a counterparty, a beneficiary I never used before. So a basic profiling system will block this transaction. The amount is very high, the counterparty is unknown, maybe the time of the day where I input the transaction on the banking system is unusual, and so on. Transaction will be blocked. So one of the first thing we did is using clustering techniques to build what we called peer groups. And this way, peer groups are the groups of customers that have the same kind of behavior. We run a machine learning algorithm that discovers the similarities in terms of financial behaviors and group customers together. Now, if I recover my example, tomorrow I buy a new car, 50K to 1,000 Swiss franc going to Albi, Switzerland. Looking at my past behavior, the artificial intelligence will block the transaction. It's unusual. But looking at the 500, maybe 1,000 customers of the banking institution that have the same behavior as myself, the artificial intelligence will figure, oh yeah, that's a new car. People are doing that everywhere, especially in Switzerland.
Very nice. So obviously this results in pretty significant cost savings, because it's not just about the fact that you've picked up the false positive, you've identified that, but it's all the time that's spent in investigating the fraud, right?
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you bring that up. Not only, in banking institutions, sometimes we don't come out of the blue. Sometimes we replace a rule-based system that was already in place. We have many of the customers where we deployed our artificial intelligence that, as a matter of fact, already had a fraud prevention system in place. But those were rule-based. And in average, our findings is that in comparison with this former system, we reduced the false positive ratio by 80%, making it only 1 out of 5 of what they were having before. So that's one dimension. But the other dimension is that all the data and the collect, all the data we collect for our analysis, we synthesize it in a customer 360 view. And using this customer 360 view, built by the artificial intelligence, the fraud investigator or the risk officers, whatever, in banking institution can also reduce the average time required to investigate a case to 1/5 of what it was before. So a factor of 80%. Wow. Once again.
Well, it also shows that really where the strength of these algorithms are, because even though a human could do this, we're now dealing with amounts of data that make that impossible, not to mention the real-time component of it, which we just couldn't do. So there, when we often talk about machines taking jobs, I think when we talk about an area like this, it needs to be clear that humans would not have the capability to do this sort of task in real time, hooked into transactional networks, right?
It's exactly that. My belief when it comes to machine learning and artificial intelligence in the financial business is that artificial intelligence will not revolutionize the banking business, but it can be so infinitely more efficient than a human being. There is this story, about, I don't remember which banking institution in the US that required so far 3 days to qualify a credit, contract. 3 days to score the credit request and, grant or deny it. And they introduced
The instance of like a credit card application or something.
Yeah, definitely. And they replaced in this process the team of human beings which were doing that by an artificial intelligence, which could brought down the time from 3 days of analysis to a few minutes. So it's really one of the dimensions that needs to be considered when it comes to deploying artificial intelligence. And it's the same thing for fraud. Of course, if you deploy a dozens of thousands of analysts in your bank, you will be able to analyze all this data and figure whether something is legitimate or not. But artificial intelligence does it in real time on one server instead of thousands of employees.
Okay, so I want to get, I want to drill down a bit more into that, but let's just take a quick break. You guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We're coming to you from three continents today, from the United States, from Asia, from Singapore, and from Europe, from Switzerland. We're talking to NetGuardians about the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning in the fraud area. We'll be right back with you after these words from our sponsors.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
NetGuardians is an award-winning fintech company helping Tier 1 to Tier 3 banks detect and prevent fraud before it happens. Offices in Singapore, Kenya, and Poland. NetGuardians.com for more information.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. This week's show is sponsored by NetGuardians. NetGuardians is an award-winning Swiss fintech. Established in 2007, they help over 50 Tier 1 to Tier 3 banks worldwide to fight financial crime. They developed the first augmented intelligence solution made for banks to proactively prevent fraud. We've been talking about that. They empower their clients by using machine learning technology, gathering contextual information, and their NetGuardian solution has achieved an 83% reduction in false positives, saved 93% of time lost in fraud investigations, and prevents new fraud cases. They were recognized by Gartner as a cool vendor in 2015, by Chartis Risk 100 as a top fintech vendor in 2018. We are speaking to two of their team, Jerome, and I've got to get your Curly, he's the chief technology officer, and Raphael Mao, the board member and chief operating officer and co-founder of NetGuardians. So gentlemen, the other aspect I wanted to drill down into here is when we start talking about machine learning capability and so forth, there's obviously a lot of banks who are investing in this. We hear a lot of money being spent by Chinese banks, by the biggest American banks and so forth, JP Morgan Chase's AI budget now and numbers in the billions of dollars. So we are talking about significant effort being put into this, but how would you build a machine learning team? You guys have been through this, but what sort of team would you require to successfully build an algorithm that could do something like fraud management in this respect?
So here, where I would start is that it's true that there are a lot of initiatives in the area of AI nowadays, as it was when we heard the first big data platform in the past. And we've seen in the past when the first big data came out, a lot of banks jumped into that domain thinking they would completely revolutionize their bank. And taking the problem only from a technological approach is probably the wrong approach, because we've seen that you might have a dozen or hundred of data scientists. If you don't couple that well with risk experts and risk analysts, maybe you will not have the best results. So if today I would have to create a new team, I would first work with the business user, with the business experts who have been in that business for a long time. And from there, I would have a couple of technologists that will help to set up the foundation of where we wanna go, which is a little bit what we hear as well nowadays about blockchain. Everybody is willing to do blockchain, but nobody's know for what use case they would use the blockchain.
So yeah. Finding that use case is critical. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I cannot stress enough how much what Rafael said is important. You know, the key to deploying this kind of technologies in banking institution is building a multi-competencies team. You know, you need to have business experts working closely with data scientists, working closely with technologists. And this is the reason why it's so expensive, because, you know, finding the business experts that will not focus on business, but that will focus on developing a new cool software solution is pretty hard. You know, these guys are pretty busy in banking institutions. And it's the reason why it's also costing so much.
You know, it's interesting. I heard this story, and I don't know whether it's anecdotal, but it represents one of the areas which is a challenge. I heard a story that Jeff Bezos at Amazon, a few years ago said to the team, listen, I want to go out and I want to hire 1,000 machine learning experts and specialists. Spend whatever you need to spend to get them. And after that instruction, the best that Amazon could do was getting about 550, 600 machine learning specialists. So if Amazon can't find machine learning talent like that, how hard would it be for banks to find machine learning talent? I guess this talks to why you guys work with universities, because it's a great proving ground for this. But how difficult is it actually to find competent machine learning practitioners these days?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Nowadays, that's a real challenge to find talented data scientists. It's really difficult. It's every domain are looking for experts in AI, in machine learning, and the university don't come with enough specialists. And when you were talking about your anecdote, I was just laughing myself, because we were discussing with a financial institution where they do have some data scientists, and today what they use them for is to do data science to optimize their rules that they have on their system in order to reduce false positive. So instead of thinking from a new angle, they just use data science in order to know if they have to put a threshold that's 10,000 or 9,055 in order to have less false positive. And that shows that having the legacy approach, if I can say it that way, is not necessarily the right approach from a banking point of view.
Now, from a novice's perspective, how would you guys specifically identify or talk about? Maybe Jerome, you're best to answer this. What's the difference between data science and machine learning?
Okay, it's an interesting question. I wasn't expecting it, so I will be thinking out loud more than it.
That's fine.
You know, machine learning is a pretty smart name that we tend to give for 8 years to techniques that are used for long ago. We're speaking neural networks, classification trees, regression system for 30 years in the field of software engineering. So while both a software engineer and a data scientist can implement machine learning algorithm, it's just, at the end of the day, it's just one new smart algorithm. Whether it's convolutionary matrix or long short-term memory neural networks, at the end of the day, it's just an advanced algorithm. And a software engineer has the competencies to deploy such a system, and the data scientist has the competencies to deploy such a system. But a data scientist, while a software engineer will have more architecture and software design and programming skills, The data scientist, on the other hand, will be very oriented towards understanding the data, discovering patterns in the data, playing with the data. A data scientist is very at ease with the data, understanding the data, and understanding what algorithm could be used and how to get the business insight we want to get from this data. A software engineer, on the other hand, will understand the system. And from my perspective, both are required, and both, you know, but at different stage of the process. When you are in explanatory, in discovery mode, you need a data scientist to figure out what you can do. And then once you have a working prototype, you need a software engineer to industrialize it and make it work in production.
Now, you know, the skeptic would say that data science just sounds like statistics, and you know, a statistician, you know, as a data scientist, or a statistician that can code as a data scientist. But there's a lot more to that, because we're dealing with this new field where you're not talking about multivariate statistics in a spreadsheet. You're talking about you know, billions of data points in real time. So that's where the algorithm, the ability to encode that algorithm to ask the right question or to find the right data through the machine learning process is key. So there is it's definitely a new science, which is why we call it data science. Let's get into a little bit more detail around how you work. You've spoken about the fact you work with 50 banks around the world. You've got these headquarters in three locations right now. But tell me a bit more about how you work with the banks. Do the banks need to be set up in a specific way in the cloud? You know, what sort of teams do they need to be able to work with you? Do you guys operate this largely independent of the team? Or, you know, how do you work with a bank in terms of teaming to get this capability up and running?
So that's an excellent question. So we do have the hybrid mode. We do have some client who works via some private cloud. We launched some initiatives and some private cloud in Europe. And we have the traditional financial institution who don't want to hear about cloud and prefer to have all their system in-house. And when we do so, what is really important is to work in partnership with the bank. And we always start our different implementation by doing what we call this risk workshop, to be aligned with the bank in order to where they want to go, what is their main critical area that they want to tackle. And we start from...
So you sort of start with a problem statement, right?
Exactly. To really, because fraud in general is extremely wide, and you can start from okay, I want to solve everything. But what we believe is that starting with a small problem statement, I want to fix payment, I want to fix internal fraud, I want to fix SWIFT fraud, going really by small area before expanding. And for that, we run this risk workshop to make sure what is the area where the financial institution needs the most the fraud prevention. And then we try to really work hand in hand with the institution as we run different approach about supervised and unsupervised approach. There are some phases where our team work by themselves, and in regards to have best result, the optimization phase, we work really jointly with the bank in order to optimize the different model that we set up for the institution. So it's really, I would say, I like to say that it's a partnership when we work with an institution, because we require them at a certain stage of the project really to increase the result and fine tune things in order to have really a striking result.
And you know, Few years ago, every time we were meeting a new banking institution and they had new concerns like Telecourse, Swift or whatever, we had to design based on our technology a new solution to cover their needs. Now, 3 years after doing that in so numerous financial institutions, since we have 50 customers for which we do banking fraud prevention and the broad meaning of the term, I mean, all the past customers we met, when we do this risk assessment workshop, it's really understanding their needs and mapping them to controls and use cases and solutions we already have. So it's a quite convenient situation in which we are now.
And one element that I would like to add as well is the first thing that we hear when we meet this institution most of the time is, oh yeah, that's fantastic, but we don't have the right data. We right. don't have the perfect data. And I think
That's what I was going to come to next.
Yeah. Since 10 years, we are working for banks. I think I always heard that. And I think it's always going to be the case. And what is important is not necessarily to think, okay, we don't have the right data. That's probably true. And it's probably going to be true in the next 10 or 20 years. They're never going to have the right set of data. But what really matters might be from what they have today, what can we solve?
Right, and this is where your experience is vital, because you guys have done this 50 times, as you've said, so you can tell them where to start, right? Where to start looking.
Absolutely, and that's really one element that that our client appreciate, is that we really kind of guide them and help them from this first point where they don't need to think, okay, we need to prepare the system for the next 3 years to start to do some analytics. So we help them to be able to start from day one with what they have and increase the coverage during the journey.
All right, so we've only got a few minutes left to wrap this up, guys. So a couple of questions I want to get out of the way before then. So the one question, obvious question I have is, so you go into an environment like this, they say, we're not sure we have the data, but how quickly, once you guys hit the ground and start working with them, is the algorithm ready to start actually proactively flagging these fraudulent transactions or preventing fraud?
It's an excellent question, and I'm so glad you asked for it. You know, then again, I'm tempting to say, we discussed about the data, we discussed about the team. Now, imagine that you build the team. You have data scientists, business experts, software engineers, you're ready to go. Imagine that you have identified the use cases and the data that you require, which is a lot to say, right? Because identifying the proper use cases and analytics techniques to find fraud, this is a several years project. Now, imagine you have all of that. You still need to implement all the data extraction, come up with a big data platform, you know, design the Spark processing algorithm to find the results and tune the model and so on. And we at Guardians, we have done that a dozen of times. And today, we know what works in which context, how to tune it, and what information we have to show to the business expert to optimize the model using supervised approach and so on. Today, if we know the core banking, if we go in at a banking institution that is running on a core banking system that we already encountered on the past, we can have the system up and running within a few weeks, 5 to 6 weeks. If we don't know the core banking and have to dig a little bit into it to find out where to get the data, it's a few months. And, you know, from my experience, considering my past life before NetGuardians, this is really striking, because I have been doing big data technologies deployment project in banking institution for years, and each and every of this project was a several years project. At NetGuardian, sometimes we meet a customer the first time, and 4 months after we leave and the algorithms are running in production and we don't, you know, take care of them anymore.
All right, so just to wrap this up in respect to the interview, where can people find out more about NetGuardians and what you guys are doing?
So you can find that more on netguardians.ch or in our LinkedIn page, where we have all the different news and blogs about what we are doing, and especially different white paper that we published frequently.
Excellent. And just one final question for you guys. If you were starting out and looking to enter a career in machine learning today, where would you get started?
That's really a difficult question. From which point of view, from the technological point of view, or from more the entrepreneur point of view?
I don't know. Well, let's say, just say as a pure technology. So you wanted to get into data science. What would you do?
If you are a young data scientist or a young software engineer, or as you say, a young statistician with a bachelor or master in mathematics and you want to go into data science, what I would do is I would look at the principal algorithm and I will start playing with them with the R environment or Python. And then I would spend some time looking at all the Kaggle exercise and contest, and I will try to reproduce these use cases, because in data science, there's nothing as doing it, whether it's in a demo, you know, in a laboratory mode, finding a data set, finding an exercise on Kaggle and trying to see if you can reproduce it. And then theory. You need to put your hands on it, you know, find out about the tools and start playing with this algorithm to figure how they work and what they can bring to you.
On my side, if I was passionate, just coming out of school, I would join a startup to really experience that in a real environment with real data from customer. So I would definitely take the path of joining a small, energetic team in order to build my skills.
Yep, and if you're interested in joining a startup, we know a couple of people you could talk to.
Absolutely.
All right, so... Jerome and Raphael, thank you for taking the time out and joining us for the session today. We really appreciate it. You have been listening to Breaking Banks. We've been talking to NetGuardians about artificial intelligence and machine learning in the area of fraud prevention and how that all works. Very, very interesting discussion. Thank you, gentlemen. If you're listening to the show, just remember that Breaking Banks is part of the Provoke Media Network. You can check us out at provoke.fm. But please, if you're listening on iTunes or you're listening out on the AM band or you're listening on the stream with Voice America or wherever you're listening to Breaking Banks, make sure you give us a shout out on social media. If you can give us a rating, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating if you download us from there. That's how other people find out about the podcast and learn about what we're doing. So please show us some love. And that is Breaking Banks for this week. I'll be back with you guys next week with another installment of How FinTech is Breaking Banks Around the World.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.